Thank you. One of the biggest problems of human beings is their fear and anxiety, the panic attacks, wondering what is going to happen next. And one of the advantages of metta meditation, we can also apply loving kindness to our future as well. To say the door of my heart is open to the future, no matter what it brings. And that by itself will make us relax and be confident that whatever happens to us next, we can always deal with in a positive way. In the same way that I look upon the past and say whatever happens, I can always learn from that, I can always grow from that. I also know that whatever happens to me in the future, I can always make something out of it. And that positive attitude towards the future is realistic, is inspiring and empowering. Sometimes I put myself on the edge. That's why being a monk is life on the edge. Walking on the wild side. Because I go to strange places. Not only with the... Did I talk about the dinner with the Queen? Yes, yeah, okay. Not only with dinner with the Queen, Queen Elizabeth that is, but also just other things which I have to do. When I first became abbot of our monastery in Australia, I thought to myself, oh my goodness, what's going to happen to me as a leader, as a teacher, holding this responsibility of sharing and inspiring other people? And then I thought to myself, well look, it can only work out one of two ways. Either I become a great teacher, and then I can help other people, and I can give them leadership, encouragement, to show them the way, and what a wonderful thing that would be. But if, when I was an abbot or a teacher, if I could not teach at all, and every time I opened my mouth, people would fall asleep, and they would walk out of the room, and I became a complete failure as a teacher, that would be even better! Because then I could be a hermit, which is what I always wanted in my life. So I thought that whatever happens, it would always be a win-win situation. And when you really look at the future, that's actually how you should regard the future. Whatever happens, you can always look upon it in a positive way. You can have loving kindness towards the future. One of the stories in my book when I first learned to have a positive attitude towards the future was when I was sick in hospital in the northeast of Thailand over 30 years ago. Now that was very tough. This was a third world country, and I was in the northeast, which was the backwaters of a third world country. And I was in the monk's ward, which was the back of the backwater of the third world country. I had a fever for about 3 or 4 weeks. They didn't know what it was at the time. So they'd inject me with antibiotics twice a day. I still remember that. This was third world country. So they did not have disposable needles like we have these days. They would recycle the needles. First they would use them in Bangkok. Then they would send them up to the provinces. And they would use them in the main wards first. And then they would recycle them for the monks. Because we were supposed to be tough guys. But even tougher than me was the nurse who was built like a water buffalo. Because she had to be. Because when she injected you, it's not like these days where you very softly just inject it slightly. It just stabbed you. Oh, that hurt. And I must admit, in those early days, I had no metta at all towards that nurse. And there I was, suffering, with my buttocks aching, having a fever, feeling so terrible. Like a Western monk, a long way from home. And I felt so lonely, so depressed, so awful. And one day, Ajahn Chah walked in to see me. this great monk had come to see me. And straight away I was so uplifted. I was so honoured. This was a great monk. And he'd come to see, no, this little monk, just to visit me. And I was so inspired for about a few seconds until Ajahn Chah opened his mouth. And I always remember what he told me. He said, Brahma Wangso, you'll either get better or you'll die. And then he left. The trouble with Ajahn Chah, you can't argue with him. It's true. What he was saying, it doesn't matter what happens. The fever won't last. Either you get better or you die. Fortunately, I got better. So, why worry about the future? It's not going to last. So this positive attitude towards the future has helped me so many times. You have loving kindness towards what's going to happen. No matter what happens, you always do something about it. If you die young, you don't have to worry about old people's homes. You're going to die anyway. Might as well get it over and done with. I remember I was flying a lot, and the Australian government had actually put a warning out for Australians travelling to Indonesia. It was actually a credible threat of terrorist activity. They said, Ajahn Brahm, what if you get kidnapped? That would be wonderful. I can have a rest for a change. I won't have to speak. But Ajahn Brahm, what happens if there's a terrorist on your plane? I'll tell you a joke about terrorists on planes. Once this fellow was on the plane, and then he boarded the aircraft, he found himself sitting next to a dog. There was a dog on the aircraft. And he said, you can't allow dogs to sit in economy class. What's going on? And the person on the other side said, this is a special dog. He's a security dog. Look, I'll tell you how it works. And he sent the dog up into the economy class, and this little dog sniffed somebody, came back, barked once and wagged his tail. And his handler said, ah, that is marijuana. We have a drug smuggler on our plane. Let's see what else we have up here. So he sent them up to business class. And the dog sniffed somebody, and when he came back, he barked twice and wagged his tail. And my goodness, that's cocaine. Let's see what is up in first class. So the little dog went up into first class. He sniffed this well-dressed gentleman, came back, barked three times. My goodness, someone is carrying heroin. We'll get him as well when we get to the other end. Let's see what else is here. So he went to another person in economy class, sniffed him, came back, started whimpering, and pooed on his seat. What's that? That's a bomb, said the handler. Okay, that's a good joke. But anyway, I think you all know that it doesn't matter if you get blown up in midair. Why are people so afraid of getting blown up in midair? We say in Buddhism there are three advantages of dying at 30,000 feet. Advantage number one, you get free cremation. On the spot, it's all done efficiently. No remains there. So you don't have to pay money having your relatives' remains installed in an expensive temple. It's spread over the world, scattered. Isn't that nice? Number two, usually for funerals, you have to spend a lot of money. If you die at 30,000 feet, the aircraft company gives you money. Insurance. So your family, they really clean up on you. And the best advantage of all of dying at 30,000 feet is you're halfway to heaven anyway. It's only a small way. So why are people afraid? It's great when they don't have such fear. So actually, why are we afraid? Why do we look so negatively on the future that we have fear, we have panic attacks? Why is it that when we go for interviews we're so tense that that's why we keep failing? I don't know if you ever rode a bicycle when you're young and can remember what it was like. I remember as an 11-year-old getting a bicycle for the first time. Getting on top of the bicycle and trying to ride it, trying to balance. I was so scared of falling off. I was so afraid that I gripped the handlebars so tightly, my knuckles went white, my body was rigid, and because it wasn't bending round the curves, I kept falling off. It was only later when I realized if you're going to ride a bicycle, you've got to relax. Don't be afraid. Don't tense up. And if you're not afraid, if you're not fearful, you balance. And that's the same with life. Whenever we're afraid, we tense up. And what we're afraid of usually happens. We make it happen. So instead of being afraid, we should always have metta towards the future, loving kindness towards the future. Whatever happens, it'll be okay. If things go well, we can enjoy the happiness. If things go wrong, we've got some more dog poo to dig under our mango tree next year. Whatever happens, we can always make use of it. When you relax like that, it means you are more likely to be successful, to be happy, and to be healthy in your life. So this is why we can develop even loving kindness towards the future. Whatever's going to happen to me, the door of my heart is open to that. I can take chances, I can make decisions, and I'm not always worrying about what is going to happen next. The trouble is that we as human beings in our modern world, we worry too much. I remember the time when I was a kid again. I had to go to the dentist. Do you like going to the dentist? I never liked going to the dentist in those days. And I worried so much, I hardly slept that night. And when I went to the dentist, I was still so tense and worried. But when I got to the dentist's rooms, I found out from the secretary my appointment had been cancelled. I worried myself so much about something which never even happened. And so these days I've learned to have loving kindness towards the future. I don't know what's going to happen next, but I know that loving kindness will always pull me through. As a monk, I haven't had professional training in things like marriage counseling or in people with psychological difficulties. I just go in there, I don't know what's going to happen next. But I make sure I have lots and lots of loving kindness. And I find out that whatever you do, if you give this beautiful energy of metta towards the moment and towards the future, you're always so successful. And I've been teaching this for such a long time now, and I've got lots of stories of people who have used metta in these difficult situations. And it's incredible, the results. One disciple who lives in Sydney, I saw her last month. She was in business, importing designer clothes, and she was very successful in her business. But last year, she had to go to London to a very big company for what would be a very lucrative contract. It was worthwhile travelling that huge distance from Sydney to London just for 24 hours to see if she can close this contract. When she arrived, jet-lagged, tired, at the office, the other directors told her, you've wasted your time. You've come on a journey which is not going to be successful. The CEO, the managing director, is in a bad mood this morning. He's usually in a terrible mood anyway, but today it's even worse. He's been shouting and swearing at us this morning. You have got no hope. And imagine that was you, traveling all that way for a contract which you've been told by the people closest to the one who's going to sign it that you've got no chance. So, because she was the disciple of me, she sat in the corner and did loving kindness. Doesn't matter what happens, you sign the contract, you don't sign the contract, it'll be okay. Don't be afraid. Just make your mind so positive with kindness towards all beings, including your future. And as she was doing this, they interrupted her. The manager was coming down, the MD. And as soon as he came into the room and she looked at him, spontaneously, it just came out of her mouth. She said, "Wow, you've got such beautiful blue eyes, just like my baby daughter." That's what she said. And this very harsh, very tough, angry managing director melted before her eyes. Smiled, and a few minutes later signed the contract. And she told me as soon as the MD went out of the room, all the other directors were standing around her. "How'd you do that? How'd you do that? Teach us. How'd you do that?" It was one of those beautiful examples of how loving kindness can melt the negativity in somebody else so much. But if you were afraid you're not going to get your contract, you get so tense you'd never be able to be so spontaneous. The spontaneity comes with confidence, and the confidence is having loving kindness towards the future. So it doesn't matter what happens, you're always going to be able to deal with it some way or other. It's like me, whenever I give a talk or give an interview, I never prepare anything. I don't know what I'm going to say. And that's a wonderful way of teaching, because it means you can actually be intuitive and make the talk appropriate to the audience, and you can respond appropriately. Too much time when we plan things ahead, we get stuck in those plans and we can't make alternatives, which means that we're not open to what is going to happen next. So loving kindness towards the future is a wonderful way of overcoming the fear and negativity towards the future. You know, sometimes I've read this in many medical journals. Sometimes people go for medical checkups, and the medical checkups find they may have had a tumor for many years. And as soon as they find out, they get sick very quickly. And sometimes if they didn't know, that tumor could be there for years and years and years. It's almost the fear is what makes the illness worse. I've got cancer. I'm going to die. It's not fair. I read in a book, this 96-year-old lady in Los Angeles. 96 years of age she was. She'd been healthy all her life. And she went into the hospital for a checkup, and they found she had cancer. And she came out complaining, "Why me? Why me? Why me?" 96 years of age, you should say, "Why not?" So why are we so afraid of the future? In fact, actually, the future is very exciting. It's interesting. So interesting that please never spoil it by going to a fortune teller. That'll be like, I don't know if any of you like the soccer. I know a long time ago, when I used to like the soccer as a young man, sometimes when you had like a recording of the match, sometimes you make sure you never watch the news to find out what the score was going to be. Otherwise it will spoil it if you knew who was going to win. It's the same that if you read a book, you shouldn't just turn to the last chapter first of all to find out who's done it. It spoils the enjoyment of life. So why do we go to fortune tellers to try and predict and spoil our enjoyment of life? That's why some people come and tell me, Ajahn Brahm, can you tell our fortune? No. Could I be spoiling so the excitement of discovering what's going to happen next? Life is like this mystery play, and you're in the central cast. But also, you know, one of my favorite sayings, I say this because Chinese people, more than anyone else, they like going to fortune tellers. My saying is, and it's obvious when you think about it, never trust a poor fortune teller. If they can't tell their own fortunes, how can they tell yours? So we try to predict the future because we think if we know what's going to happen, then we'll be safer. Actually, it makes it worse if we try and predict the future. The point is that it doesn't get rid of the fear if we know what's going to happen next. The only way to overcome that fear is with this wonderful, wise, loving kindness, which tells us whatever happens next, the door of our heart is open to this, it's all good, we can handle anything, no matter what happens. So if you go in that attitude to a job interview, you come across as easygoing, intuitive, confident, because you've got no fear. When you've got no fear, then you usually get the job. This is one of the wonderful things about life. That confidence is one of the most powerful attributes of the human being, which pushes them through to success. Just confidence. And all that confidence is this wonderful loving kindness which accepts yourself as you are and has this positive attitude to the future. It doesn't matter, whatever happens, it's going to work out okay, some way or other. I know that many people have a lot of fear of committing themselves to relationships, to getting married, to setting themselves up with a partner, or changing their job or whatever. I spend a lot of time counseling people, where they're wondering, should I marry this guy? Should I set up with this woman? Should I change my job? You know my saying, which I keep on saying, I borrowed this from Nike, stop worrying about it, just do it. Much easier. It doesn't matter what happens. If you find out you married the wrong guy or the wrong woman, you learn a lot from that mistake. And it's all learning experience. It's not the end of the world. You keep on going. There's no such thing as an end of the world. Life keeps on going. I know that some religions, they try and make you afraid, which is why they hate the talk on loving kindness towards the future, because they make you fear that something terrible is going to go wrong. It's going to go wrong, I'm sure it's going to go wrong, or the end of the world is coming. And some time ago, you remember 2000, at that time that people, some people were saying this is the end of the world, 2000 years after the birth of Christ, we're going to have the end of the world. And I tried to get someone. Do you really believe that? Yes. Really? Yes? Okay, put $10,000 down. My monastery will put $10,000 down. If the world ends, great, you can have my $10,000. If it doesn't end, I'll have your $10,000. They wouldn't do it. They wouldn't do it. Now what? The point is that the world never ends. People think that the worst is going to happen for a long time. Have you ever seen those people, those doomsayers? It's all going to go wrong, it's all going to go wrong. People believe that. This one fellow, he's a bit of a scallywag, but I love him very much. He's one of my disciples. It was my birthday in Perth. And many people came to offer dana that day. And he said, I've got a present for you, Ajahn Brahm, in front of everybody. He said, what is it? And he unfolded a piece of paper. And he said, it is the horoscope from this morning's newspaper. You know, in horoscopes, I always do a special one if it's your birthday that day. And he read it out. He said, this is your horoscope for today, Ajahn Brahm, your birthday. And he read it out. Today is a good day for romance. I'm sure he made that up, but it was funny anyway. But it was wrong, it was wrong. So the point is, you can never really tell the future, but who cares anyway? Why do we want to tell the future? When we have loving kindness, no matter what happens, we can have loving kindness towards whatever's going to happen, and we don't get afraid, we don't get panic attacks. I don't know what it is, but when I was a young person, that people were generally more confident. They weren't so afraid, and they didn't get these things called panic attacks. Many people these days get panic attacks where they freeze up, they just can't do anything, that sometimes in the most inopportune moments, they tense up, they can't even scream. Why? And how can we stop these things? These intense fears which paralyze our lives. Sometimes children, they may be in their examinations and they tense up. Which is why I tell children, look, have loving kindness towards your future. If you take an exam, only two things can happen. You pass or you fail. If you pass, wonderful. Your parents and your teacher will be so proud of you. If you fail, wonderful. At last you can stop taking exams. Because you know you always have to take another one once you pass, until eventually you fail one. Then you can stop. So that way the children aren't so upset. I used to be a school children. I know just how exams are just so cruel sometimes. When I was at Cambridge, that one of the graffiti which was outside the wall of actually the physics labs, the old Cavendish laboratories in Cambridge, exams kill by degrees, it said. Wonderful saying. But the point is that we do need those examinations, but the more we fear we're going to fail, we're going to fail, we're going to fail, the more actually we do fail. So how do actually you deal with actually raw fear, with panic attacks when they're upon you? What I've said so far is great in theory, but what do you do when it actually happens? One of the wonderful tricks which we learn in Buddhism is a very simple meditation. Is have some body awareness. Because whenever you are afraid, you will find that has a corresponding feeling somewhere in your body. It could be that your body is shaking, or your knee is trembling, or you've got a tension in your gut, or whatever it is, you can always associate fear and panic with a physical feeling. I taught this recently to a young girl in Adelaide who was suffering panic attacks, a sense of being inadequate, and it worked so well that she actually came, I think, in the top 5 or 6 at the end of the year examinations in her university. And now she'll do anything for me because I saved her relationship and saved her career. What I said, that whenever you feel such fear or panic, what do you feel in your body? And for her, it was a tight stomach, tensing up. They said, when you have that fear, forget about the emotional part, go to the physical part, because you'll find that easier to deal with. Be mindful of the physical effects of that emotion. And now go to that part of the body and just relax that. It's much easier to relax the body than it is to deal with your mind. So she went to her stomach region, even like she massaged it herself, rubbed it, gave it some attention, relaxed it for maybe 10-15 minutes. And then I said, after you've relaxed that part of the body, then go back to your mind. And as soon as she went back to her mind, she found the emotional part had eased quite considerably. It's a great way of dealing with emotional problems by going to their physical manifestation, dealing with them on a physical level, relaxing that part of the body, which is not that hard to do. And when you go back to the mind, you find the emotional part has also lessened. It's a feedback mechanism, mind to body, body to mind, and dealing with the body part. So if you are a person who is always afraid, you're going to an interview or an examination, or you're going to go and propose to your girlfriend, whatever it is, look at your body, what's tensing up, relax that part, and you find that when you go and propose, you're relaxed, you're at ease, and there's a good chance she might accept. If you're really, really afraid, tense, fearful, lack of confidence, she'll never marry you. Who wants to marry someone like that? But if you're confident and relaxed, then you're increasing your chances quite considerably. When you relax, you're always more successful. Which is why it's a fear of the future. It might go wrong, it might go wrong, which creates the things going wrong. In my book, I related a story from a TV show which I watched as a young man. It was called Kung Fu. I don't know if anyone's old enough to remember that. I think David Carradine. It was a story of this young man from the United States. I think he was half Chinese, half Western. And he went over to China to learn the art of Kung Fu and eventually went back to the United States. I think it was like a Western and martial arts for the very first time on TV. And even though it was supposed to be Buddhist, I remember one of my friend's school teachers, "That's Buddhism, why is there so much violence in every episode?" he would say. But nevertheless, I would watch that. And then this one episode, which I always remember, was about fear. And it started with this little young novice monk called Grasshopper being taken by his blind master into this very dark and scary room. In the temples, there's always some rooms which are kept locked, out of bounds. And this was one of them. So for the first time, little Grasshopper was taken in to this scary, dark, forbidden, mysterious room. And as he was taken in, it took maybe a minute or two for his eyes to accustom to the darkness. And then the master asked him, "Grasshopper, Grasshopper, what could you see?" And Grasshopper said, "I see water, Master, like a swimming pool of water." "Grasshopper," said his master, "don't go close to the edge. That's not water. That's acid. Concentrated, sulfuric acid." If you read in the newspapers recently, they've just had a probe to Mars. No, to Venus. The European Union. And they found out that the planet Venus has got an atmosphere of sulfuric acid. And it's so dense, the pressure, I think it's 100 times the pressure on Earth. And it's so hot. When I read that, being a man, I thought, that explains that saying, "Men are from Mars, women are from Venus." I'm going to get into trouble for that one, I know. If you ever go to Mars, it's not that much better. But no. Someone actually once asked me, "If men are from Mars and women are from Venus, where are monks from?" And I said, "Outer space." But anyway, this was a pool of concentrated sulfuric acid. But the master said, "Go a little bit closer, but not too close. Be careful. What do you see at the bottom of that pool?" A little grasshopper. And we could see this as well. It's on TV. He said, "I see bones, Master. Leg bones. I see a skull there. I see human bones." "Yes," said the master. "They are bones of little novices like you who failed the test." This started getting scary. Even I started getting scared. And I was in the living room of my house in London. "Do you see that plank?" "Yes," said Grasshopper. There was a plank going from one side of the the swimming pool or the tank to the next, to the other side. A plank which crossed the pool of concentrated burning acid. The master said, in 7 days' time, little grasshopper, you will have to walk across that plank. You'll be able to have to balance yourself and overcome your fear, because if you fall in, I won't be able to save you. Your bones will add to those who already fell in. And poor old grasshopper was terrified. And if anyone had seen me, I was as terrified as little grasshopper. But he took him outside of that very dark room, into the temple courtyard. Because in the courtyard there was another piece of wood, exactly the same size, but not over acid. This was just supported on two bricks on either end. Grasshopper, his master said, for the next 7 days all you need to do is to learn how to balance. Learn how to walk on that plank. Because in 7 days' time, you will get the test. You have to walk over the acid. So for the next 7 days, Grasshopper learned how to balance himself. And it was easy to do. It was quite a thick plank. Anyone could do it. He could walk blindfolded backwards. But after 7 days came the real test. He was taken once more into this usually locked room in the back of the temple, which everybody kept well clear of. He was taken into the room, and there was the plank over the acid with the bones in the bottom. And the master said, Grasshopper, get on the end of the plank. And you could see, even with 7 days' training, Grasshopper did not want to go. On a plank, Grasshopper, the master ordered. And reluctantly, poor little Grasshopper stood on the end of the plank. And he looked back at his master, pleading for some compassion. You could see it in his eyes. He would say, don't make me, master. Please, don't make me. Walk, said the master. There was no choice. Little Grasshopper had to walk over the plank above the concentrated acid, looking at all the bones on the bottom of little novices. A plank of the same size over the stone of the courtyard is not as long or thin as a plank the same size over acid. Now that plank seems so thin and the far side seems so distant that poor little grasshopper was trembling. You could see it. His body was shaking. And he hadn't even gone halfway yet. By the time he was gone halfway, his whole body was wobbling. And it looked like he was going to fall in. He started to sway. And I got really excited. What was going to happen? And then we stopped for the commercials. I used to hate that television. You had to watch these stupid ads for about 5 minutes. Well, I'd been wondering what was happening to Grasshopper. So once the adverts were finished, we were back in that temple room. It was dark. And they usually go like a minute or two backwards. So you just saw him when he started to wobble. And then he started to sway. What was going to happen? He fell in. He fell into the acid. I thought, oh my goodness. And the master, the most compassionate man, started laughing. How can you do that? And little grasshopper was splashing. It wasn't burning. It was only water. And the bones, the master would just toss those in for what we now call special effects. And as little grasshopper was splashing around, wondering what was going on, the master said, Grasshopper, why did you fall in? I'll tell you why you fell in. Fear pushed you in, little grasshopper, fear made you fall. And that was the whole purpose of the exercise. And that was the message of that whole thing. If he'd have been told that was only water, he would have never fallen in. But once he was afraid and thought it was acid, it was the fear which pushed him in. It is the fear of failure which creates the failure. It's the fear of something going wrong which makes it go wrong. So when we ever have a fear, you women may have a hard part in your breast. You men may be having a trouble, difficulty urinating. Oh my goodness, this is prostate cancer. Oh my goodness, breast cancer. Oh my goodness. When you're afraid, you make it more likely to happen. What you're afraid of, the tension, the stress, very often brings it about. People who are afraid of their partner leaving them get so controlling of their husband or their wife, they get so afraid that they may be looking at somebody else. The fear destroys their marriage. When you're married to someone else, please make trust most important. If you're afraid, you control, you create the causes for that marriage, that relationship to break down. So the only thing which we should really be afraid of is fear itself. And the way to overcome that fear of our future, whether it's a lump in the breast, difficulty in urinating, worrying about your partner, is to have compassion for the future. Whatever happens, it'll be okay. In the same way that when you had a child, or maybe when you were a child and you were afraid, and your mother said, it'll be alright, it'll be alright, never mind. And it was alright. Your mother's loving kindness for the future is what pulled you through. Now when you haven't got a mother to do that to you every night, and I can't do that to you, I can't be by your bedside stroking your hair saying, it'll be alright, it'll be alright. What you can do is loving kindness. It's beautiful, the door of my heart is open to the future. Whatever happens, I'll be able to do something. Never mind, it'll be okay. The world is not going to end. Things don't go wrong, nor do they go right. They just evolve into new opportunities, new chances. There's no such thing, as far as I know, of things going wrong or things going right. It's just opportunities, lessons to be learned. Obstacles which just make us stronger. Learning possibilities, growing pains. And that way, that nothing stands in front. Nothing stands in the way of our success. Whatever happens, we can always learn. We can always grow. We can always be better people. And I'll finish off with an address which many of you may have read from Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple Computers. He gave this address at Stanford in the graduation ceremony last summer in the United States. He told his story. He said that when he was at university, he dropped out. He wasn't inspired anymore by what he was learning. But the last few months of his time at university, the thing which he really enjoyed was calligraphy. He could not do that when he was studying for a degree because no one thought that calligraphy was of any use in getting a career. What use is calligraphy? But he enjoyed it. Later on, when in his garage he started to put together the first PC, his knowledge of calligraphy was now found to be most useful. He said in his speech, "The reason why we have such beautiful fonts on all computers now was because when he designed that font in the first computer, it was his knowledge of calligraphy came to the best use. He realized that at the time we think that these experiences have got no purpose. Every experience of your life has a purpose. It's just we cannot recognize it yet. Later on, we'll know why that happened. He used his knowledge of calligraphy after dropping out to design the first computer script. And it was beautiful. And everybody has advanced from that. We also know that later on, after his company Apple Computers became so successful that he got fired. He got fired from the company he created. How unfair is that? If you got sacked from your job and you didn't even create that company, you think that's unfair. But what would you do if you got sacked? What Steve Jobs did, he decided to start another couple of companies. One of the companies he started was called Pixar. He started two other companies, one Pixar, multinational now, and the other one, I forget, another computer company, which was also so successful that Apple Macintosh took over his new company, and the deal was he'd get reinstated in Apple Macintosh. Nothing can stop such a person. They're not afraid of the future because they know that whatever happens, even if you get sacked from the job, it's just another opportunity for doing something positive. Which is why I always say, if ever I do something wrong and I'm arrested, it'd be a wonderful thing to spend time in prison. I can be on retreat for 2 years. So that way you're not afraid of whatever happens in life. You can always make use of it. And that's how we have metta towards the future. We have no fear. That way we're confident. Panic attacks don't really happen. And we find our success, our happiness levels, rise and rise and rise. So that's how to have metta towards the future.